Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
Welcome to the program. Got a big show for you. Justin Haskins is here to nerd out over some polls. But we're going to start out by doing the fall of the Sierra Club. Yes, the Sierra Club. When's the last time you heard the name the Sierra Club? Probably been a long time, right? They're an environmental organization, right? Left wing. We kind of remember them. They were a big factor in our politics for a really long time, but you probably haven't heard their name much recently. They're still around, technically, and they're still putting out wonderful messages about what we should do to our globe. Here is a recent promotional video to tell you exactly what they're up to.
At the Sierra Club, we believe in the power of together.
Oh, good.
Together, we will create a world that honors the harmony between our humanity and our planet.
Oh, perfect planet.
By abolishing the oppressive systems that deny our right to a healthy, joyful, and sustainable future.
Oppressive systems?
We will do this by balancing the urgency of our cause with a commitment to care for ourselves and others.
Huh?
And collaborating with like-minded people like you.
Don't say that.
Because together, we can make a difference. By centering anti-racism.
Wait.
Because racism harms and divides us all.
Oh, I thought
you... dismantling the social and economic barriers so we can build communities based on justice. And believing transformation is the ongoing process of working towards equity and justice
equity
in ourselves,
justice,
our actions,
and
our relationships. Through this journey, we'll transform our Sierra Club community to be part of a powerful movement. A movement to fight for environmental, racial, economic, and gender justice.
Gender, racial, economic, and gender. I thought you were a climate place. Like, weren't you telling us to like stop burning coal or something? Now you want gender justice? What's going on with the Sierra Club? Well, let me tell you what's going on with the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club embraced social justice, then it tore itself apart. This is a piece not from theblaze.com, but instead from the New York Times, which goes into what the heck has been going on at the Sierra Club lately. It is a fascinating tale. And really one that echoes through all of our politics, I would argue. Let me give you some of this. This is really interesting. 2016, the club was at the height of its success, leading what many in the green movement consider the most successful environmental campaign put on by anyone in the 21st century, called Beyond Coal. The club put its energy behind the single measurable goal of closing all of the country's 500-plus carbon-spewing coal-fired power plants, armed with more than $120 million. In total funding? No. Armed with $120 million from billionaire Michael Bloomberg, from one guy, they got $120 million. They used lawsuits, petitions, and protests to convince regulators and utilities that coal plants were too dirty and expensive to keep operating. Now, of course, we're aware that coal power use is down considerably here in the United States. And of course, there's multiple reasons for that, not necessarily many of them to do with the Sierra Club, but they're claiming victory over that one. So environmental programs, height of their success. And then who shows up? Donald Trump. Donald Trump was elected. Fundraising jumped by $2 million in the 2 weeks after Election Day. The number of volunteers surged by 2019. The club's internal records counted 4 million champions, a group that included dues-paying members as well as supporters who had donated, signed petitions, or participated in events. Notice it's a very broad group of people you're counting there, signed petitions. But I digress. As Mr. Trump sought to roll back a broad range of progressive victories, the club's leaders decided their old strategy was too small for the moment. This happened with our journalists, too, right? Like our old strategy of just kind of doing journalism, but sort of from a left-wing perspective, it's not big enough for the moment. We need now to just blatantly lie about everybody all the time. Now, what did they do? What was this broadening of their movement? First, they sought to transform their own workplace, demonstrating a commitment to fair wages. The club agreed to expand the number of staff covered by an employee union and to raise union member salaries by an average of more than 30% over 5 years. Even the union was surprised. If you can surprise a union by paying them too much, that's a fascinating approach to do business, especially when the, you know, the payments are coming from just people who are trying to donate to help the environment. But okay. At the same time, the club asked its supporters to agree with positions farther from the environmental causes that had attracted them in the first place. It issued a equity language guide, which warned employees to be cautious about using words like vibrant and hardworking because they reinforced racist tropes. Do you know how racist it is to think that hardworking is a racist word? It is so racist. Lame duck session was out because lame was offensive. Even Americans should be avoided, the guide said, because it excluded non-U.S. citizens. This is a recipe for success, I'm sure. After the murder of George Floyd in 2020, the group called for defunding the police and providing reparations for slavery. The club even turned on its own owner, own founder, should say owner in this context, because we're talking racism here. John Muir, with Mr. Bruin saying the environmental icon had used deeply harmful racist stereotypes in his writings about Native Americans and black people in the 1860s. I'm sure all the people of today were really worried about what was written in the 1860s. In late 2020, the Cubs club surveyed its dues-paying members, most hardcore supporters, and the members said they supported racial justice. But when asked to choose among priorities, they ranked climate change first and racism tied for last. More than half the members also said they were worried about the club's shift towards social justice and the fact that it will detract from its core mission of protecting the environment and alienate conservatives, according to a copy of the survey obtained by The Times. In 2021, Mr. Trump left office, removing the common enemy that had helped hold the Sierra Club's shaky coalition together. The numbers of donations and champions, which both peaked in 2019, began to drop. And when you say began to drop, you might say, well, gosh, are they down a little bit of a fall off, maybe not as many new donors. Sure, all that's true, but you come to this show for one thing, right? Graphs. This is quite the hill they're falling down right now. Look at the decline. Now, on the left side, you see, and we'll explain this, of course, for podcast people. It was about 4 million. It has declined now to maybe 1.5 million, a massive, steep drop off. On the other side, you see expenses have not dropped off at all. In fact, they've increased every single year except one. And that was the COVID year. It was the only year it did not increase, though revenue is way down from its peak. Group has lost 60% of the 4 million members and supporters it counted in 2019, held three rounds of employee layoffs since 2022, trying to climb out of a $40 million projected budget deficit. I remind you, they got $120 million from one man. They're $40 million in the hole. Political giving has also dropped. Federal campaign finance records show $3.6 million in donations from the Sierra Club during the push to defeat Trump in 2020. But none as Mr. Trump stormed back to the presidency in 2024. In this year, the Trump administration returned better organized and better prepared than its first term, and the Sierra Club was the opposite. While Mr. Trump boosted coal power, canceled wind farms, and rolled back pollution limits, the club was consumed by internal chaos, culminating when the board fired its executive director, Ben Jealous, former president of the NAACP. Outside, the New York Times didn't say that, but I would say he sucks, and the fact that you actually hire him to run your organization is hilarious in and of itself. During Mr. Trump's first term, when the Sierra Club was flush with donations, its leaders sought to expand far beyond environmentalism, embracing other progressive causes. Those included racial justice, labor rights, gay rights, immigrant rights, and more. This is how this all broke apart for the Sierra Club. You know, I had an organization where a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds would say, well, I want clean air and clean water. And then they just tried to loop them into every liberal cause. This did not work. By 2022, the club had exhausted its finances and splintered its coalition, drove away longtime volunteers who loved the club's single-minded defense of the environment by asking them to fully embrace its pivot to the left. Some even felt they were investigated by the club for failing to go along. That sounds like a lawsuit in the making right there. Many hardcore supporters felt like the Sierra Club was casting aside the key to success. It was an eclectic group of activists who had one, and sometimes only one, cause in common. Even Mr. Trump's return could not solve the Sierra Club's problems. In the month after Mr. Trump won the 2024 election, the club's internal count of the group it called Champions declined down to 1.5 million, about 60%. The Sierra Club said it had reduced its efforts to recruit these more casual supporters in 2023 after the bulk of this decline occurred. Its hardest core supporters have also dwindled. The numbers of dues-paying members has fallen by 27% from the start of 2021. Patrick Murphy is the club's current board president, who has helped lead the group since 2020, said in an interview that he could not name any decision he regretted. He pulled the Kamala. He did the Kamala on The View thing. I can't think of anything we would reverse for Joe Biden. I have a hard time pinpointing how I believe we should have made any different choices, Mr. Murphy said, or made different choices is the exact quote. And I'm happy where we are today. And this shows from where they are today. If you go to their website today, despite the fact they've lost 60% of their supporters, despite the fact that they, you know, it looks like they're falling off one of those nice cliffs that they'd feature in a wonderful environmental ad, with their subscribers down so much, it looks like, you know, you jump off that cliff like a roadrunner and splat on the ground. Despite all of that, you can go find their 2030 strategic vision on the website. Is it like, hey, we're just going to focus on the freaking climate, maybe some trees. Okay, that's about it. That's what it should say. You could take that verbiage for free if you want to, Sierra Club. But no, it says instead this: the cascading crises of climate disruptions, species extinction, a nature equity gap? The hell is that? The pandemic, racial injustice, destruction of democratic institutions, and economic inequality combined to make today a now or never moment. And what's fascinating about this story, maybe more than anything else that could happen with the Sierra Club, because they're completely irrelevant to your life at this point, is this kind of traces the exact path of the Democratic Party, does it not? You know, if there was a Democratic Party that would just address some, you know, goals that were more left than I had, maybe, you know, they were supposed to be the party of the working man. Remember that? If they had stuck to that stuff, they might be much more successful today. But instead, we've seen basically a collapse, a degradation, at least, of the Democratic Party, loss after loss after loss, and to a place where they've now lost Donald Trump twice. Why? Well, at least partially because they just embraced insanity. The Ibram Kendi, you know, anti-racism nonsense, the gender weirdness, all the strange left-wing causes they just jumped on board for. The left-wing did this, the Sierra Club did this as well, and they turned into a mirror image of each other. Both failing organizations with a future that is, at the very best, highly questionable and looking to degrade further in the future. If you want to feel sharp and focused and ready to go, you got to get sleep. That's the only thing you can do, really, at the beginning of that whole journey. And I will say you can do it for less with Beam. Beam Cyber Sale right now is going on. They have the biggest discount of the entire year. Sales going right now. You can save up to 50% site-wide when you use the code STEW. You'll get Beam's Dream Powder for $32.50. And that's only about a dollar a night for real quality sleep that leaves you clear-headed in the morning instead of groggy. Dream is formulated with natural ingredients, nothing synthetic, nothing weird, just kind of clean nutrition that helps you fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and wake up feeling like yourself again. Beam is a proud American company founded on hard work, integrity, and responsibility. I use it. I love it. My daughter loves it as well. It's like this hot chocolate, basically, and it's really delicious. There's like a cinnamon one. There's like a caramel one. There's like really good flavors. It tastes really good. Plus, it helps you sleep. ShopBeam.com/stew. ShopBeam.com/stew. Use the code STEW. Get up to 50% off right now with Beam's Cyber Sale. You can get Beam Dream for $32.50. The catch is it's only available until it sells out at this price. So think about it. How much would you pay for a truly great night of sleep? With Beam's Cyber price, it's only $1.08 per night. ShopBeam.com/stew. ShopBeam.com/stew. And try Beam today.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
Joining me now, Justin Haskins, Vice President of the Heartland Institute and Senior Fellow with Our Republic. And we've got a new book coming out. We're going to get into that in a couple minutes. Justin, welcome to the program.
It's great to be back.
Yeah. Congratulations on everything that's going on. You got a lot of exciting developments going on right
I
now.
I do. Yeah.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
Including a brand new poll. You like
yes.
to do these sometimes. And, you know, I'm a polling
love
geek.
It.
You're kind of that same way.
I'm total geek.
Yeah, I love
this
it.
This is my favorite thing. You have no idea. I'm like refreshing my email like every day waiting for the results to come back. I'm so excited.
And it's sort of the difference, I have to say, it's sort of the difference between like, I love watching sports.
Huh?
You're like able to be the GM of a team. Like you're actually making the polls. I just get to read them and analyze them. You get to actually make them and come up with the questions. Yeah. Which, first of all, how did that get started?
That started probably 5-6 years ago. I met the guys over at Rasmussen Reports. It's a great polling firm. I was shopping around trying to find out what does it cost to do this?
Yeah.
How do we go about it? And they are just the best. And we've been working together for years on it. We've done like 30 or 40 polls. Some of them have been massive, massive polls. And it gives you the opportunity to make news and actually discover new
yes.
things, which is what I really like. And I like to write poll questions that, not every single one of them, but a lot of them, that nobody is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, let's ask people, especially people on the left, like, how crazy are you really? Let's get right down to it. And so we do, you know, we had a poll one time where we asked during the height of COVID, what would you do to someone? You know, would you punish someone who refuses to vaccinate their children?
Mm.
And a lot of people said yes, especially Democrats. So then we said, well, what would you do to them? We gave them options.
Yeah.
And throw them in prison was a
torture.
Top option.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, no one's willing to ask those kind of questions. So Rasmussen works with us on that. And it's awesome. So
yeah, it's fun.
Learn a lot of really interesting things from it.
Yeah. And if you're not a polling nerd, this isn't like the stuff that you're like posting on Twitter, right? Like it's not a Twitter poll. These are scientific polls actually done by a legitimate polling outfit. And you're able to kind of ask questions that, you know, the media should be asking, but don't. And you kind of go into socialism. Obviously, we had the situation with Mamdani getting elected in New York City, and he's going to be the mayor of the city. This is actually really going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
It's very scary. Although I'm actually really curious to know your thoughts on this because I know you're such a big fan of Cuomo. So you must have been so. This was like the worst election for you of all.
Legitimately. I mean, I will say, I said this on the air, really hard to talk about. And, you know, I talked to so many people who were like, I can't believe Mamdani, they got to get Cuomo through. And I could not find that passion. I'm sorry. He's just too horrible, too awful, as they say, AndrewCuomoIsAwful.com. I really couldn't find any way to root for him. I mean, I feel bad for people who are in New York. I know a bunch of people who live in New York and, you know, they're dealing with those decisions right now. Do I move out? Do I leave? You know, I mean, Mamdani is really that bad. You know, Cuomo would be more of a normal Democrat with just really corrupt.
And
you know, sure, he'd murder a couple of your relatives and, you know, maybe grope a few others. But still, generally speaking, he'd be a normal Democrat. I can understand why you'd be scared of Mamdani, but you know, look, at the end of the day, I don't know how much better Cuomo would have been.
No,
you know?
I don't. Well, especially because I don't know how much of Mamdani's agenda he'll fully be able to implement anyway, right? So the thing about Mamdani for me that is most disconcerting is not what he'll do. I don't live in New York, and I don't want to, so you know, that's fine if they want to go that route, but. It's more, and I don't think he'll be able to accomplish a lot of it. But what concerns me is what does it say about society? What does it say about younger people? What does it mean to have the most powerful nation's largest, most powerful city run by basically a communist? He's not even just a socialist. Yeah. I mean, when you listen to him talk and explain his views, he really believes that the collective should own the means of production, which is basically communism.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what does that say? And where are we heading as a country if the Democratic Party, if this is the new face of it, him and AOC and Bernie and people like that, I mean, what's going to happen if one of them becomes president someday? Yeah. You know, these are the kinds of things that I'm concerned about.
And I feel like we live in a country where, at least at one point, like the idea of socialism was completely insane. Like, you know, I grew up in the 80s mostly. I watched Rocky IV about 600 times. Yeah. I know communism was defeated. I watched it on TV. but like, you know, you go back to the early 1900s, you have a period where, you know, you have Debs, you have an actual socialist movement. You have people who are, you know, toying with the idea. And then it goes away for a long time. At least you'd get the like Peace and Freedom Party and they'd get like 0.03% of the vote in the election. That's not where we are now, and your polling shows this. Can you go
through it? So essentially, one of the things we've seen repeatedly, not just in this poll, but in other polls we've done, is that so this was a poll of 18 to 39-year-olds. So we're only polling likely voters who are under the age of 40. Mm-hmm. So we want to know what the future of the country is going to be, not just how voters would vote in the next election. And what we found is that depending on how you ask questions about socialism and collectivism and free markets, they answer in wildly different ways. And what it tells us is that the label democratic socialism resonates really well with them. So about half, it's a little over half, say that they want a democratic socialist to be president in 2028. Not that they would vote for him, but that they want it to happen. That's who they want to be president. When you ask, do you like socialism as opposed to, say, a free market economy? The numbers go further down. It's like usually in the mid 30s or low 40s or something like that. If you ask if they like communism, it drops even a little bit further. Okay.
A little bit further?
Yeah, it's still in the 30s usually.
30s.
For young people, yes.
God, that's an incredible number. And I mean, this is a philosophy that killed 100 million people.
Yeah, I know. But this time will be different, so don't worry about it.
You get the right people.
That's the official communism slogan. Yeah. This time will be different. So the language matters a lot, but there's something about the democratic socialism, those two things together. Mm-hmm. that people used to immediately recognize that means nothing to throw democratic in front of it. But today, with younger people, they think of Sweden and Denmark and places like that, which are not socialist societies.
They're not. Yeah, and when you ask them, they are very clear about it. Yes. We are not socialist.
Right. The most disturbing thing of all, though, and the poll shows this, is it's not just the label. When you ask about specific crazy socialist ideas, they actually support those more than the label and more than the politicians. Mm. So like in our poll, we asked favorability for Mamdani, and it was a little over 50%, which is disturbing in and of itself. Yes. But then we asked about Mamdani's grocery store, communist grocery store policy.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know this, by the way, we did do a whole show on this at one point, but basically city-run grocery stores, government-run grocery stores.
Right.
And we should point out, the entire policy is built on him misreading the website. he thought there's a bunch of money that they were lighting on fire in New York City. That was actually not what it was. It was it was another budget line. You have to go back and watch the entire details on that. But it's important to understand this is a policy completely built on a misunderstanding of a website.
Yep.
By Mamdani. Okay, go ahead.
And so we asked if people wanted to expand that everywhere, that idea.
Okay.
And it was high 50s, 58%, I think, wanted to do that. So then we asked, what about the rent freeze idea that he has and policies related to building lots of government housing? And this is another big Mamdani plat. That was over 60% supported that idea. In previous polls, we asked, do you just want to nationalize whole industries? And over 70% of young people said that they wanted to do that. We specifically named big tech and healthcare and a whole bunch of other things. So younger people are attracted to economic socialist ideas. There's no question about it from this poll and the other polling that we've done. That's the direction that they're heading in. And the reason for it is we asked, why are you attracted to socialism? And the number one reason was housing costs are too high. Mm. And this is the root of so much of this. Younger people cannot afford to have wealth of their own in a real way, unlike previous generations. And because of that, they're looking around saying, well, what's the point of this whole capitalist system? The whole idea of that is that you own your own property and you get to manage it and do whatever you want with it, but we can't afford our own property, so let's just socialize everything. The system's rigged. These are the kinds of things that they say in the polling questions. When we ask if the economy is unfair to younger people, it's over 60% say yes to that. You know, when we ask, do you think the system benefits wealthier people who already have money or corporations. The overwhelming majority say yes to those questions. So they think it's completely rigged against them and that the only way to fix it is to do something radical. So the good news is they're open to other radical ideas. It doesn't have to be socialism, but socialism is on the table.
It's so strange, you know. There's two parts of it that are strange. One is, you know, when you look at the actual numbers, much of their hatred for capitalism really doesn't play out in their results. I mean, you look at younger people, they actually are, this is only new as of a couple of years ago, but at the same age ahead of boomers and Gen X as far as how much wealth they have. Now, that doesn't mean that you own a house. It doesn't mean that, you know, I feel like some of these, like, lines that we draw of like home ownership versus rentals, there's reasons that you might want to do that in certain situations, but there's also reasons to not like owning a home in certain situations. You know, you're locked in there for quite some time. If the market goes bad, you're locked into that home. So that's a whole separate thing. But the second part of it, maybe we should focus on this, is why would you see socialism as the solution to this? This is something that has been tried over and over again. It never works. I was telling Glenn, we were talking about this the other day, Glenn and I, and I said, like, this is like, I keep working out. I keep going to the gym. I keep eating right. I keep going out and running every single day, and I can't make the Olympics. I need to amputate my legs. Right. It's like, well, what? Why would that be the solution? It's not going to help you.
Yeah. I'll use another one. This is an analogy that Glenn and I came up with when we did Arguing with Socialists several years ago, a great book, New York Times bestselling book. It's the deadbeat boyfriend idea. It's the I can fix him thing. Yeah. It's just you think to yourself, yeah, I know he's a degenerate. Yeah, I know he sleeps around. He doesn't have a job. I get it. But I know he's got a good heart. I can fix him. I can fix him. And they just can't let go.
Yep.
They can't let go of that because the ideals in it are so nice sounding that, oh, everybody's taken care of and there's no poverty. There's plenty of wealth to go around that they just can't let go. And also young people don't know history very well. That's a huge part of it. I mean, if they knew the history of it, the big reason you referenced growing up in the 80s, everyone was well aware that there were socialist governments in the world that were doing horrible, horrible things.
Yeah.
It was not a secret. And that had been the case for many decades. Mm-hmm. So it was well ingrained in society. Today, that isn't the case anymore. And that's a huge part of the problem.
There's so much more to go through here. Can you have a second to hang out?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Justin Haskins, back with more in a second.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I'm having a great time talking about the disintegration of American society with Justin Haskins. welcome back. One of the things that's fascinating about how young people fall in love with socialism, at least to me, and I don't know, maybe again, like, let me just be old for a second. As a Gen Xer, maybe this is the way we grew up, but like I feel like most people that I knew, their path was, you started off, as you became an adult, you were very much focused on independence. And it was very much, you were thinking about like, maybe, you know, some people would argue you're, you know, selfish or whatever, but like you were worried about your direction in life. Where are you gonna work? Who are you gonna, you know, be married to or date? All those things that were about your control over your life. And as you get older, you start appreciating more the aspects of community, right? Like you think about your town a little bit more, you think about your country a little bit more, you think about kids and family and everything else. I mean, it's this idea of like, oh, we're going to take on the man. Like, if that's your attitude as a young person, you'd think the last thing in the world you'd want to do is hand over all government power to the people you're constantly complaining about. The okay boomer thing, they're always complaining about these people, and yet they're like, hey, please, on a silver platter, take over my life. How do those things work together?
I mean,
if you don't know, you're the one that's done the polling on it.
It's a problem. The reason I think is because younger people feel like that is a problem no matter what they do. because they look at the world and they say the boomers are running the economy. They're running the big corporations. They're running all those things that we don't like. And they're also running government. We don't like that. But the government's saying that they're going to take power away from these other people and give it to us. And we'll get some of that wealth. And it, but they're not saying that about the government. It's not like the big corporations are coming to us and say, hey, if you support us, we'll take power away from these other boomers over here. And then you can help. We'll help you run the government.
Maybe they should say that more.
They probably should, because that strategy might work. But I think that's what it comes down to. Ultimately, whoever is, you know, willing to it's like they're suffering from a disease and the only person in town is a snake oil salesman. But it's like, we'll give it a shot.
It's something.
Because it's better than nothing.
Leeches. I mean, leeches might work.
And there's a lot of people standing around saying, no, that guy's been here before.
Yeah.
People die. Don't do it. And they're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Just we all just sit around and wait till this disease consumes all of us? No. I'm gonna try the snake oil. That's what I'm gonna do.
That's fascinating. So how do you turn this around? Because I think, you know, capitalism has its problems, as every system does. It doesn't work perfectly for every person. It's undoubtedly true, as it, you know, I know we're huge defenders of it. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not perfect. Of course, there are people who can't afford houses and they wish they could. Maybe their parents did. All that being said, the world is quite obviously a better place in a million different measurable ways than it was. People are starving less. They're out of poverty more. They're, you know, they have more material possessions. There are things, you know, inside the family and stuff that I would want to be better. But like, is it just a matter of like convincing them, hey, actually, these things are going better. We should build on our success. Or what do you do to get them across this line to say, hey, maybe capitalism can be the answer?
Yeah, I think, and this might be a little bit controversial, I don't know, but I think that conservatives need a big, bold vision that rejects the idea that everything is okay right now and says, look, yeah, capitalism does make everything better, but what we have right now is not really free market capitalism.
No, of course not.
And what we want to do is empower individual people to be able to go out into the world and pursue whatever the dream or economic interest that they have is. We don't want you to be stuck working this terrible job that you don't like necessarily. We want to make it easier for small businesses. We want to get rid of all these stupid occupational licensing requirements. You know, we want to provide people with the ability to better their lives. We want to stop pushing people into college degrees that they don't really need. We need employers who are willing to hire people without college degrees, which has been a huge problem historically. We need to be able to provide a way for people to be educated. We live in the time when it's the easiest time ever to be educated. Cheaply. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot of money to be educated. You could have the best education in the world from watching free videos online. Mm-hmm. But we're charging people the most we've ever charged for tuition, a college degree. There has to be a way to solve that problem.
There is.
Of course there is. And that needs to be part of the equation too. But you know, I always think about like when America was the land of opportunity for people and people really believed that, you had poor people coming here by the millions from Europe. And they come to America and they go to New York City or something or wherever, and they're able, with very little, barriers to entry, start a business, build something for themselves, and over time build generational wealth as a result of that. And if you had the same kind of thing today, it's not possible. It's not like you can get off the boat at Ellis Island today and then go become something like a barber. You can't do that. Mm. You got to go to school for that. You need money. Yeah. You got to get a license. Mm-hmm. So think of all of the things we've done. We live in a time when young people are so entrepreneurial. They want to be able to go out and be, you know, for better or worse, be TikTok stars and you know, the gig economy and everything is huge right now.
Always OnlyFans. If you go that direction.
That's a direction
the American
you can
dream.
Go in. That's an option. And so they're open to that. But conservatives, they're not leaning into that at all. What they're doing instead is they will complain if confronted with it. But for the most part, what I hear from conservatives, especially older ones, is complaining about younger people saying, well, they don't work hard enough or they don't know how good they have it or whatever. The reality of the situation is this. Although younger people do probably have it a lot better than they think they do, there are some things that have happened in recent years that are unprecedented, like the cost of a home from, like, say, 2019 to 2022 went up by over $100,000, pretty much overnight.
Yeah.
The average cost, if you're looking at the ratio.
Another government program.
That's the key. Yeah. Health, if you look at the cost of health care, you look at the cost of college tuition, you look at the cost of housing, these are problems created by government.
Yes, amen.
And that's what you have to, instead of saying we need government solutions, say no, government caused these problems you're always complaining about.
Yes.
Boomers.
Yes.
Boomers in government did this. We need to go in a different direction.
Let me ask you this. Is the solution us yelling you're stupid louder? Is that the, that's not it? Because I want to try that. Can I try it? Just to see.
I mean, I think there's a lot of people trying it, right?
You're right, and they're not stupid. They do feel these really things. And I think the temptation at times is, you know, because we've been through it, right? Like, we went through, I did not come from a wealthy family. Like, we had to struggle. I didn't have money to do basically anything.
Same here.
And you, with age comes that realization that, I can make it through these things. And these things can be positive, especially if the government doesn't screw them up. But, of course, they very well might. And now I want to if you could spend a couple of minutes. We are a little early on this. Your book is coming out in
January.
Yep. So we're a couple of months early. You can pre-order it now.
Pre-order it now. The digital copy actually is available. Will come out a little bit earlier in December. So
very cool.
Something a little differently. It's called The Next Big Crash. Yeah.
Very
optimistic.
I think, yes, of course, as you always are. But I mean, I think it ties into what we've been talking about. Can you give us the premise?
Yes. It's this incredible story that takes place over many decades, but it affects everybody right now. And at the heart of it is this incredible problem that most people don't realize exists. You don't actually own your own investments. You think you own them legally. You think that they belong to you, but you don't actually own them. So most investments, so securities investments like stocks and bonds, your retirement accounts, you think you own those things that you paid for, but you don't.
I think I own these things.
You don't.
But I don't.
What you own is a contract called the Securities Entitlement Agreement. Mm. You don't actually own the underlying security itself. Mm. The security itself is owned by one big institution called DTC. It owns everything. All of these securities are housed in one place. They're the direct registered owner, and you own a contract that gives you certain rights to those things. And this system was set up in the 1960s and 70s. They've changed the laws repeatedly behind the scenes. Most people have no idea that any of this is a problem or exists. And they've created all of these crazy rules that, in the event of a big crash, the too big to fail institutions will be safe. They'll be bailed out, potentially, depending on what they do, using your wealth because it actually doesn't belong to you. The modern stock market is built on this idea or this reality that you don't own these things directly. The derivatives market, all the gambling that goes on Wall Street, shorting and options trading and all of that. Why don't they have to go to you and ask your permission to do those things with your stocks? Because you don't actually own them. They're held in pooled form in one big institution. Mm. And given them, they've made a fortune off of this. And the craziest part of all of it is the origin story of all of this. I go into this in the book, The Next Big Crash, is unbelievable how this started. Mm. And I'll just tease it because we don't have time to go into all the details of it. But the man that they put in charge of leading this new institution, big Wall Street firms and banks built this thing, the man they put in charge of it was completely and totally unqualified to be the lead person of this. It made no sense at all. And when you trace his history back, what has this guy been doing for 20 years leading into this job? He was doing things like being in the CIA for many years, covert operations in South America, propping up foreign governments, and then suddenly he ends up in New York, and he's in charge of the wealthiest singular institution that humankind has ever created, as far as I'm aware.
Wow.
It's an unbelievable story, and it affects everybody right now. And the best part is, if you buy a copy of the book, the proceeds all are going to a nonprofit organization that I started, Our Republic. Part of what we're doing is trying to change the laws so that this is no longer a problem. So if you buy a book, you help solve the problem.
Wow. Okay. Now, if I buy the book, do I own the book?
Yes.
Okay. At least if I own it, you got a paperback or
a
hardcover.
Own it physically.
Yeah, you got
otherwise
own it physically.
You don't own the book,
right.
Actually.
Actually, that's probably true. So you cannot own the book digitally on December 9th, is that right?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay, I see it on my thing. It's December 9th, but it's in December. It's called The Next Big Crash, Conspiracy Collapse, and the Men Behind History's Biggest Size. I don't know the story at all. This is incredible. Yeah. I can't wait to hear about it. It is coming out. Justin Haskins wrote it, and you can get it as well in January. But pre-order it right now. You can just get ahead of the game, and whenever it's ready, it'll be delivered right to you. Justin Haskins, Vice President of the Heartland Institute and Senior Fellow for Our Republic, the organization he was just talking about. Justin, this is incredible stuff. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, too.
You know, this kind of ties into what we were just talking about. You know, you think about your medications, and if you need to get access to them, how do you? You know, this, a lot of us saw this during the COVID stuff and all the supply chain, nonsense that happened afterward. You needed to get a specific medication, and it wouldn't show up for months at a time. And you'd be like, what's going on? I need this. Well, Jace Medical kind of came through and said, we need to do something about this. So for people, when these disasters happen or problems happen, they have access to the medication that they need. And it's called the Jace case from Jace Medical. It's kind of like the way to get into this because you can take it with you on a vacation. It's a safe, reliable way to make sure you have a personal supply of the prescription antibiotics that you might need in case of an emergency. I've talked about this before. We were on a vacation and I didn't have my Jace case with me. And it meant I had to drive like an hour and a half or something to a pharmacy, the only one that was 24 hours, which was way, way far away from where we were, to help my son who had an illness that we couldn't wait on. There wasn't really another great option. Jace cases, you get them. They come with, basically you go to get a licensed physician and they will actually work with you on this. And they give real FDA approved medication, clear, easy to follow instructions and safe use and storage. Plus they'll give you long-term prescriptions as well for the medications you might use every day. There's a bunch of different options. Just talk to the people at Jace Medical. They're great. Go check it out. It's jace.com, jase.com. The promo code is STU, jase.com. The promo code is Stu. So an interesting part of the tariff conversation that's happening today, and again, we talk about this a lot, and Donald Trump says a lot of things to kind of win the moment in the media or win a moment in an interview, and that sometimes makes the rest of his staff's life living hell. In this particular case, this is sort of what's happening with the tariffs, in that if you follow the tariff Supreme Court arguments, one of their central arguments was that a tariff is not a tax. If it's a tax, basically there's no argument for them to be able to do this. Under the current authority with IEEPA. So basically they're saying, okay, it's not a tax. In fact, the government lawyer or Trump's lawyer came and said, hey, like actually this would work best if we got no revenue at all from it. It's not a revenue generating situation. The revenue is sort of a side thing. We don't even care about the revenue. Of course, the president is constantly talking about how important the revenue is and has now come out and said that if it will unwind $3 trillion of revenue, he says it will be return of funds, including investments made. So he's kind of blowing that up into a bigger number, basically saying, well, these countries that have promised to build factories here won't want to build factories now because of this. But it's also, of course, hundreds of billions of dollars, at least when it comes to revenue. It's kind of at odds with the actual argument he's making in court. Whether that makes a difference or not, who knows? I mean, I think the Supreme Court also might say, look, he's talking in an interview. We're not going to actually count that in policy. Though quite clearly, it is a revenue-generating measure. I mean, there's just no doubt about that part of it. But is it a tax? I don't know. John Roberts has surprised us on that question before, so who knows? House Democrats are releasing new Epstein emails that are big today. I don't really have time to get into all of it. Maybe we'll try to do this tomorrow. The two biggest things, these are emails not to Trump. These are emails that do mention Trump between Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. And one of them says that Trump spent hours at my house, Epstein's house, with Trump. So one of the victims spent hours with Trump. We don't know what that means yet. There was another part where he said Trump knew about the girls. Now, it's very well known that he knew that Epstein liked younger girls. Doesn't necessarily mean that Trump was having sex with these girls, obviously. And it all, certainly doesn't even mean that Trump knew that they were underage. He might have. But the accusation there would be Trump should have gone to the police or something. If he does know that they were underage, obviously that would be accurate. So we don't know what comes of this. We don't know where this goes from here. A lot of Epstein stuff coming up now. Is this the reason Trump didn't want anyone to know about it? I don't know. We'll get into it maybe in more detail on tomorrow's program. Blaze TV's newest show is now live. It's Rufo and Lomez from Christopher Rufo and Jonathan Lomez Kapperman. And you can catch them live. Well, it's not live, but you can catch them on demand, I suppose, right now. Blaze TV or on YouTube.com/Rufo and Lomez. Don't miss it. It's Rufo and Lomez, now available on Blaze TV. Head to StuDoesAmerica.com. Get access to the entire network there. Sign up today on Blaze TV.